Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and you're listening to the Mark Steiner Show here on WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, and on Delmarva Public Radio, WSDL 90.7 FM and WSCL 89.5 FM. The Mark Steiner Show and Soundbites are a weekly look at food farming, food system farming, and our environment. And we start off this week looking and talking about nutrition and what we do to ourselves, our own bodies, when it comes to taking care of ourselves in terms of nutrition, what we eat, how we eat it. It's our monthly segment here on this Mark Steiner Show that we're putting in sound bites this month with Chauncey Whitehead, who's a fitness professional and owner of CD Health and Wellness Lifestyles, a community fitness activist and dear friend. Good to have you in the studio.
Good morning, Mark, and good morning, Baltimore and Eastern Shore.
And the amazing Miss Ernestine Shepherd, personal trainer and professional model, world's oldest competitive bodybuilder at the age of 77. And we're going to take a picture of Miss Ernestine and put on the website today because
she's unbelievable today.
Looks stunning.
I've never seen this outfit.
Well, good morning.
Good morning.
Mark.
Good to have you here.
I'm happy to be here.
And Angela Jean Meadow, again, is joining us. She is a registered dietitian, a certified diabetes educator who's an expert in nutrition specializing in type 2 diabetes, gestational diabetes, polycystic ovarian syndrome, and weight management. Say that fast and twice. Affiliated with the Towson Diabetes Center in Baltimore. Angela, welcome back. Good to have you with us as well.
Hello. How is everybody?
Good morning,
doing
Angela.
Well.
So, nutrition.
Johnson. Nutrition. Today, this month, and this is where I want you to chime in, Angela, is National Nutrition Month. Tell us all about that, Angela. What's going on?
So National Nutrition Month happens every March, and this year's theme is about eating right never tasted so good. And as a registered dietitian, we are really, really excited to promote nutrition. It has been, you know, one of those hot topics, and I think more and more people are more conscious about what they're putting in their bodies. You are what you eat. So it's important for the world to know that we can prevent weight-related diseases just by eating better.
I totally agree. Miss Ernestine, we did an event the other day, and people always want to ask you about what are you eating to stay so slim and lean. And with that outfit, Mark, I just can't say anymore. Angela, we wish you were in studio to see it, but go ahead, Miss Ernestine. Tell the audience a little bit about your nutritional habits.
Okay, here's how I eat. I eat a lot of baked or roasted chicken. I eat tuna fish. I just love tuna fish. I eat a lot of baked white potatoes, baked sweet potatoes. And then when I say this, everybody cringes. I drink a lot of liquid egg whites.
Uncooked.
Uncooked. And I've gotten adjusted to drinking that, and it tastes so good.
But you don't put any butter in your potatoes either.
I don't put anything on any of my foods. My vegetables, everything is plain. No salt, no pepper, absolutely nothing. And I've gotten so accustomed to eating that way, it's just second nature to me. No goodies. Now, if I want any goodies, you know what I have? Jell-O. No sugar in it, and I'll have that, but not too often.
Angela, what can you tell the audience to celebrate the National Nutrition Month? Just some simple nutritional habits that they could start today, March the 4th.
So the one thing I always say is about thinking about what you actually eat. And Miss Ernestine is doing a lot of great principles already. She's including lean protein in her diet. And lean protein includes things that are baked and broiled, roasted, or grilled. Making sure that you include healthy vegetables. So always think about half your plate should be fruits and vegetables and taking advantage of that. Another thing is making sure that you drink not sugary beverages, but making sure we drink plenty of water.
Correct.
And that is really one of the important things. Most of us assume that we're hungry, but it may be a thirst mechanism that we're really thirsty. So drinking more water is really important. And eating on time. I always encourage people, try to eat meals about 4 to 5 hours apart. Because you'll really get your body into a rhythm of when you're hungry and when you're not hungry, and not eating when you're bored.
not eating it when you're bored. that is something that that all of us do.
It's classic, right? Yes, right? Because
definitely,
you know, we, most of the time, it's called distracted eating.
Yes.
When you're bored, you're sad, you're mad, you're angry, you find things that are hard and crunchy, sweet and indulgent to really enjoy. But you know you have to kind of flip that and make it healthier choices. So if you want something crunchy, choose some raw vegetables and hummus. Making sure that if you want something sweet, pick fruit instead. So making these things a part of your lifestyle, remember, eating right never tasted so good. It can still have flavor. It can still be colorful. But make sure that you don't eat when you're bored.
Angela, we're coming out of the, our latest weather event. And I believe most of us were bored. And we've probably been doing some bad eating and some bad snacking. But it is March, and it came in like a lion. And now the weather is going to get a little bit better. What could you suggest when the weather is bad or if we get another weather event, some snacks or some non-type eating that's kind of bad for you when you're bored?
Well, the one thing I invested in was air popper. So air popcorn popper.
Right.
And that, it really helps you with that crunchy, you know, when you have that for something crunchy. But air popcorn is wonderful because it has no fat. It is a whole grain in your popcorn. And not only that, you can spice it up. You know, if you want something spicy, sprinkle on some cayenne pepper. If you want something a little bit sweeter, sprinkle on some cinnamon. These spices can add flavor without adding fat. Another thing is think about cutting up, you know, carrots and broccoli.
Yes.
And making sure that you have those to munch on. Those are great things to have. And you know what? One of the biggest crazes was kale chips.
Yeah.
And you can make your own
kale
chips.
They're easy to make.
Yeah, they are. They're easy and they're pretty good.
Yes, you can make your own kale chips right at home. And when you're snowbound, why not enjoy cooking?
Could be a family project.
Yes, it's a family project.
Kale chips are so easy to make. I mean, you just put them in the oven, a little olive oil, a little salt if you want on top, and just and bake them. They come out crispy. They're delicious. They're a great snack.
All right.
You know, and everything I do, I cook with olive oil. I mean, olive oil is the basis for almost – olive oil and garlic are two of the things are the basis of most things that I put together. And I am the cook in my house.
That's true.
All right now.
I know. Well, you know, and one other thing is nuts, because
nuts
are really – they are monounsaturated fats. They are heart healthy for us. But the key is the portion size.
That's correct.
So you make sure you keep it to a quarter a cup. But nuts have wonderful benefits. And they could be one of those foods that, you know, you can munch on, and they still can be satisfying.
And so what is the connection for you, Chauncey and Miss Ernestine, between diet and you're working out and staying physically fit? Because you can eat healthy doesn't necessarily mean you're physically fit. Or does it? I mean, and you've also said to me, Chauncey, that you eat anything you want to eat, but you work out.
Well, but I don't practice that on a regular basis, you know.
So let's be clear, right?
I look at nutrition, and I am not a certified dietitian or nutritionist, but I look at nutrition like the gasoline that we put in our bodies. And sometimes I eat for the specific sport or the fitness event that I'm preparing for. A lot of people will ask me, Chauncey, well, what do you eat? I want to eat it. Well, I tell you, if I'm preparing for a marathon, I might be running 60 to 70 miles a week, and I don't think you can eat pasta and spaghetti, you know, four or five times a week like I do. So I would tell them to look at the exercise or the physical activity that you're doing the day. We get a lot of individuals that are in construction that they go to some of the greasy spoons in the morning, but they're throwing drywall all day long. You're sitting at a desk. You got to look at it as the fuel that you're going to give your body. And sometimes I give it high tests, and sometimes I give it low tests. It just depends on how far I'm driving.
Now, with me, I eat the same day in and day out. I've been doing this for the past, I would say, good 18 years. So I don't have to really think about any changes for races or bodybuilding contest because I stay the same size. I have the same amount of calories every day. And everything that I'm eating is giving me the necessary energy that I need because I don't believe in any supplements or things of that nature at my age because it wouldn't be good for me. So I'm eating the nuts, just like Angela said. My fruits, I eat the ones that I can. My vegetables, I know just what I need. And when I go to my doctor, hooray, a good report.
Me
I get.
Too. That's
so. I'm sure you do. And Angela, most people are, even if they work out or they try to eat healthy, are not Mr. Ernestine and they're not Chauncey. They're me. And there are a lot of people in the studio right now in the station who that's who we have to kind of think about when we think about what people do every day and what they consume, how they consume it. So what do you talk to your patients about?
I really focus on it starts with that grocery list. What you bring in the house makes a big difference of what
all
you're going
right.
to eat. So think about shopping the perimeter of the grocery store. And when we do that, we think about we go straight in. That is our produce section. We take advantage of more fruits and vegetables. Fruits and vegetables should be about 60% of our cart, okay? 60% of our cart. We move on around to pick lean protein options as fish and chicken, lean beef and lean pork options, making sure that, or you could use even vegetable options such as tofu. Or soy.
Yes. Right.
Then we want to move on over and choose low-fat dairy and eggs. Eggs are beneficial for us. And if we do have dairy, we want to make sure we choose something low in fat instead of a whole milk choice. Moving right around, then that's when we choose our whole grains. And we may choose whole grain bread. We may choose whole grain pasta. But we want to make sure we focus on the perimeter and making sure we fill up our cart there versus those inner aisles. And just making sure that you keep all the nutrient-rich foods on your list most of the time, that will be your key to wellness.
And, you know, when you said tofu, one of the things people don't realize, and I was one of those people who always used to say tofu, my God.
No.
But if you cook it right,
that's the key.
It can really be delicious.
It's true.
And it absorbs the flavor of whatever you're cooking.
That's right.
You know, like if you go to House of Kush, which is in downtown Baltimore,
they're
which
good.
Is a vegan restaurant, a soul food vegan restaurant, they prepare it in a way you think you're eating ribs when you're
That's
eating
right.
tofu.
Oh, my.
So you can – that it's an amazing – and people in Asia, especially in Japan and in China, have been eating tofu in place of – not in place of, but instead of eating a lot of red meat for
right.
years. And that is part of –
part of their diet.
The daily diet.
Well, we know also but soy-based proteins are low in saturated fat, and they do have fiber in them. So if you think about it, if you could just go, you know, yesterday was Monday, but when we think about meatless Mondays, if we're able just to make that switch, you know, instead of a hamburger, switching to a veggie burger, instead of having, you know, grilled chicken on a salad, even if we could grill some tofu on something or having a stir fry, a veggie stir fry instead. These are quick and easy things that you can do to be healthier.
I like that. Meatless Mondays.
And it is, and Mark Gunnery, one of the producers here, just texted over saying it's also an endocrine disruptor, which means it doesn't mess up your hormones.
Good, good.
That's correct.
When you eat tofu. So that's good. So so we appreciate that. And so I mean I think this is important. We are nutrition. What's it called? Nutrition
National
Nutrition
Month.
Month.
Thank you, Angela.
Thank you, Angela.
And before we run out of time completely in this segment, what's happening Saturday?
Saturday is our eighth consecutive walk at Druid Hill Park, our eighth consecutive
in
community
Baltimore,
health
Maryland.
Walk, Baltimore, Maryland, Druid Hill Park, 9 a.m. by the tennis courts. Miss Ernestine and I, go ahead, Miss Ernestine, are going to be there.
Oh, I will be there with bells on. I can hardly wait to see all of you. We start at 9 o'clock
sharp.
So please be there. Don't worry about the weather. We'll be fine. Yeah. Just dress appropriately for
It's supposed to be a great morning, Miss Ernestine, of 35 to 40 degrees.
That's
and we
true.
Personally would like to thank Mark Steiner and his lovely wife, Valerie, for coming out at our seventh walk and walking all 5 miles with us. Mark was walking very fast. He kept up with you, Miss Ernestine.
Yes, he did. I tried to lose him along the way.
He wasn't
going to
let you go.
But he wouldn't let me do it. I'm going to get you, Mark.
Well, next time we'll see. Because you're probably healed now, right?
Yeah, that's it. You caught her while she was injured, Mark.
We'll try next time.
All right.
Well, I want to thank all of you for being here. Chauncey Whitehead, fitness professional, owner of CD Health and Wellness. Always good to have you here.
Always good to be here.
Miss Ernestine Shepherd, always lovely to have you grace our studios.
It's my pleasure.
And Angela Ginn-Meadow, who is the national spokesperson for the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics. Also education coordinator, nutrition diabetes educator at the University of Maryland Center for Diabetes and Endocrinology in their Midtown campus. It's always great to have you with us as well.
Thank you.
And we will see you all Saturday. We'll hope to see you Saturday morning.
Yeah, we hope to see you Saturday morning,
yes,
9 a.m.
Mark. You know, we've got to do this walk.
Well, there's a 10 a.m. staff meeting here. So
we'll be done by 10 a.m. 14-minute miles, Mark. We'll be done. We'll be done.
All right. Maybe I will see you then.
All right.
Thank you so much for joining us here on Mark Steiner Show and Soundbites. Good to have you with us.
Great being here.
We're going to take a brief break, and when we return, we're joined by Leah Frazier and Denzel Mitchell talking about the future Harvest CASA beginner farming training program. And Leah and Denzel represent a new world of farming that we want to share with you. Stay with us. Welcome back. Good to have you all with us here, here on Soundbites and the Mark Steiner Show that you're listening to on WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, and on the Marvel Public Radio, WSDL 90.7 FM and WSCL 89.5 FM. On our way to our conversation, I want to remind you that two events are coming up that we would like you to know about. And as we get into this conversation, because one of these were going to be interviews on the show, but the snowstorm kept people away, and so we couldn't get them recorded. But I'll tell you about things you don't want to miss them. We will talk to these folks after they've had their events, though, so you can hear what they have to say. And one is happening this Thursday, March the 6th, at Washington College in Chestertown, Maryland. That's Washington College in Chestertown, Maryland. This is Thursday, March the 6th. We've got to put a time on this. The author, Anne Valesis, will map how we lost our way from farm to table, and chart a return to a purposeful palate. Her book is called Kitchen Literacy, How We Lost Knowledge and Where Food Comes From and Why We Needed to Get It Back. And we'll be talking to her on next week's Soundbites, but you can meet her in Chestertown, and we'll give you that exact timing as soon as I get it. On Saturday, March the 8th, a full-time alternative market in Virginia Shenandoah Valley and passionate defender of small farms, Joel Salatin, will be in town visiting the Eastern Shore to talk about his work and new book, Folks, That Ain't Normal, A Farmer's Advice for Happier Hens, Healthier People, and a Better World. He'll be in Talbot County at the Talbot County Free Library in Eastern Maryland and at 3 p.m. on Saturday and at the Purdue Building Auditorium in Salisbury University at 7 p.m. Joe Salatin will also be joining us next week on Soundbites. And we will get you the exact timing of the other one in just a moment. You can find those information about those things at steinershow.org as well. We are now joined by Aaliyah Frazier.
Yes.
Good to see you again.
Nice seeing you too.
And Denzel Mitchell joins us by phone, founder of Five Seeds Farm and Apiary in Baltimore County, and a former program participant with the CASA, Future Harvest CASA Beginning Farmer Training. Denzel, always good to have you with us, brother.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. How you doing?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm good, man. I couldn't be in the studio today.
But school's delayed, and you had to stay home until the bus came to pick up the kids.
Yeah, absolutely. and of course, they missed the bus. And I got to drop them off.
So let's talk about this for a moment, though. And when you were on the show last, Aaliyah,
mm-hmm.
you were interning?
Yeah, with Denzel at Five Seeds.
And you were a student where?
I wasn't a student. I was working at Johns Hopkins.
Johns Hopkins, that's right. And so, but now you're joining this beginner's farmer program.
Uh-huh, and I put my 2 weeks' notice in at Hopkins.
Wow.
Yeah, so I have a semi-full-time job. I can pick up hours whenever I want with the green building company that puts bio walls and roofs on commercial spaces. And I'll be in the farmer's training program one day a week, interning on another farm, not Denzel's this year.
So tell me, what pushed you to do this?
It was just, every person I met and everything I've done in this field has opened my eyes in new ways that made me realize where I was going in the other direction towards the medical field just wasn't for me. And one particular quote from the author of Pharmacology really got to me, because she was a doctor, but really in tune with agriculture and farming. And she said, "Who am I to get more prestige than the farmer when I only treat one part of the ecosystem when the farmer treats the whole ecosystem?" And that's kind of like how I felt my whole life. Like, I've wanted to help people, but never just in that singular space of being a doctor.
So before we turn to Denzel, I'm very curious about, I mean, you grew up in the city.
Yeah, well, right outside the city, suburbs, Baltimore County.
Suburbs.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So farming was not like on your fingertips. It wasn't.
No, not at all.
In your genes necessarily. Maybe
it's in my genes somewhere.
Some generations back, it was somewhere.
Uh-huh.
But so this is a really interesting sojourn for you.
Yeah.
And what turned you into this direction, do you think?
I literally have soul searched and thought about it, and it was a vision. Like, I had a vision one night working at Hopkins, looking out the window and seeing like all these abandoned buildings and empty spaces. And I wanted to, you know, work with it and start an urban farm, because I did do a little bit of urban farming in Philly through another organization. So I reached out to Denzel and started interning with him, and the rest is kind of history.
Denzel.
Yes, sir.
So this is, I mean, you in your roots, there is farming, not far back from where you are, because where you grew up in Oklahoma.
Yeah. I mean, it's been a part of my tapestry since I was a kid.
But I'm curious, but you know, we're going to take a short break here. When I come back, I'm very curious about from both of you. I mean, because this turn towards new farming, one of the things I heard last night, Bill McKibben, I watched a short video that he produced with him on the Nation magazine site that we can put on our site, where he talked about the fastest growing sector of agriculture mm-hmm. in America are new smaller farms
mm-hmm.
producing vegetables and animals. And marketing directly to the consumer or to grocery stores or restaurants as well. So I'm going to talk about that in terms of what you see as the future, mm-hmm. especially as being young African-American farmers and what you think that change means and may portend as well. So stay with us here on Mark Steiner Show and Soundbites. We'll be right back with Aaliyah Frazier and Denzel Mitchell, one a veteran of, one a brand-new student of the Future Harvest CASA Beginner Farming Training Program. Stay with us. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. You're listening to the Mark Steiner Show and to Soundbites here on WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, and on Delmarva Public Radio, WSDL 90.7 FM and WSCL 89.5 FM. And to just before we jump into conversation, I want to remind you of the time we didn't have earlier That the author Ann Velezes will be speaking this Thursday, March the 6th, at Washington College in Chestertown, Maryland, about her book, Kitchen Literacy, How We Lost Knowledge of Where Food Comes From and Why We Need to Get It Back. And she'll be on Soundbites next week, but you can meet her 6:30 at the Hinson Lounge, H-Y-N-S-O-N Lounge, Hodson Hall, at the Washington College campus, 6:30 this Thursday. I'll tell you that again before we leave the air, so you can check all that out. But you'll hear her voice on Soundbites here next week. And we are joined at this moment by Leah Fraser. I said your name right,
mm-hmm.
didn't I?
Yeah.
Leah Fraser, who is now a current beginning farmer with the Future Harvest CASA Beginner Farmer Training Program. Denzel Mitchell went through that training program, but of course is founder of Five Seeds Farm and Apiary, now in Baltimore County, but started in Baltimore City on a street corner. And has moved to the county. Do you still have the city operation going?
Yeah. Actually, that's where Aaliyah's growing now.
Mm-hmm.
She grew there last year and got her marketing chops sharpened,
yeah.
and now she's gonna be managing that space and selling produce from there just like I used to.
That's phenomenal. So is Hood Honey coming back?
Mm-hmm.
Hood Honey.
That's right.
That's what I call it.
Hood what?
Hood Honey.
Hood Honey. I need to get some bees out there. Yeah.
The honey that Denzel had before was just, we jokingly called it that because of where it was grown, but it was incredibly good honey.
I like that name.
Yeah, it was good. It's just something about what's in the nectar supply that's in the city that produces really amazing honey.
So tell me what you think about this. I mean, this is interesting that because we always think of this world of farming, especially in today's world, as, for want of a better term at the moment, a world of white people, right?
Mm-hmm.
We don't think of black farmers. Black farmers used to be a huge presence in America, as your family was, Denzel, in Oklahoma. And do you see something changing, shifting? Do you think of yourselves as anomalies, or do you feel something is shifting?
Yeah, I definitely see a shift. I mean, I know for the longest time, young people would often say that gardening or growing food wasn't for us, meaning black people. And, you know, and then that was a way to open up the conversation about the historical context of agriculture and black people's contribution to American agriculture and American cuisine, and more specifically, Chesapeake cuisine. And how, you know, we've always been a part of the food system, and we've always been a part of how food was produced in this country, whether it was voluntarily or involuntarily. You know, and that's really the visceral reaction that's created is our involuntary participation in agriculture.
Yeah.
But, you know, as we have become more socially and politically conscious, and each of us has found a way to be more active in, you know, changing the political landscape here in America or the social structure, you know, we've keyed in different ways. And for me, you know, I've done a lot of different stuff, you know, but food and agriculture has definitely spoken to me the deepest. And, you know, and this is what I put my energy into. And I think there are more and more people like me, my age, you know, and of my background and the same experiences that I've had, and are starting to have kids now and wanting to do the exact same thing. I mean, there's lots of folks in my age group, you know, hip hop generation in their 30s, they've got young children and they say, wow, you know, I always wanted to farm or I wanted to garden, you know, so I'm glad you're doing it. You know, so, you know, I'll do my thing. I'll do film. And, you know, you do agriculture. And I think that's how we build a new type of community that's a lot more constructive than what we were used to in the 80s and 90s.
And, Aaliyah, how do you see it? I mean, as a young African-American woman leaping into farming.
Mm-hmm. So going out there and trying to bring friends out there, there's either or. Like, either people are gung-ho about it or people are like, ew, why are you outside getting dirty? So I've thought of the term, like, post-traumatic slavery disorder because a lot of young black people think
post-traumatic slavery disorder.
Yeah, like, okay. We think we're not supposed to be out there. Like, that's so in the past, but I'm just trying to show people there's so much power in feeding yourself And whether I'm feeding you or it's your community feeding you or you're outside, you know, growing your own food, there's a lot of power there. And that's something my generation is lacking. Like, we're searching for power, wanting power. And I'm trying to say, like, it's right here in front of you, like in your backyard. You have the power to feed yourself and, you know, create your own community, like Denzel said, of different paths and different expertises coming together and bartering and helping each other out so that we aren't so dependent on capitalism and, you know, the society that's been placed on us. Like, we have the power to create our own systems.
So post-traumatic slavery disorder, I love it.
Literally.
So, but I wonder how you think this fits into what I was describing earlier. Bill McKibben, who's 350.org organization, wrestles with this issue of climate change in a very active way in America and pushes with direct action. But one of the things he said in this video, and it's interesting, and you looked it up after I watched it last night, that the fastest growing segment of agriculture in America, the kind of farming that you want to represent, Aaliyah, and you do represent, Denzel, in terms of small farmers on smaller plots of land, not farming for a large kind of industrial, not for a large company, mm-hmm. but farming solely for yourselves, maybe in co-ops with other people. So what do you think that portends? Let me just start. What do you think it portends, period, for agriculture, what it might mean? And then I'm curious what you think after that, what it portends in terms of more people of color getting into farming. But let's start with the first. Denzel?
Right. So the first thing it means is that, you know, that there is this societal shift in how people are becoming connected to their food. And we all understand that we need to take some control over how we're eating. And so there's this kind of cadre of younger and younger minded folks that are getting into agriculture all over the country. And I do think that, you know, they call it the Greenhorns movement. You know, there was that documentary a few years ago that talked about that. But the other part of that is that anybody who is ever interested in agriculture, and we've talked about this before, Mark, is able to get in. That's the only way that you can get into agriculture is as a small scale grower. You know, whether you're leasing land or you bought a piece of land, you know, land is expensive and the prices of land are increasing. And, you know, now with the capabilities that we understand of how to grow food and how to grow food in an intensive way, you know, you can start a small, eventually profitable business on a much smaller scale. And that's much more accessible than buying, you know, 1,000 acres or 2,000 acres and spending tens and hundreds of thousands of dollars on mechanization to do it. You know, we now understand that it doesn't have to be that way. And you can create a sustainable, financially feasible lifestyle for a family on smaller acreage. And, you know, and I think, again, it's just a shift in the way people are thinking about food, that they want to have a relationship with where their food is coming from. They want the food to be quote unquote fresh. You know, that's kind of a cliche term, but they want it to be fresh. They want to know where it came from. They want to know what's been on it. And people are starting to think more about what the impact of the food is that they're growing on. And there's lots of things to that. You know, Michael Pollan's work, of course, Joel Salatin, who you mentioned earlier. You know, these folks have been talking about this stuff for years, and now I think it's starting to come around and actually affect us. And, you know, it's young people, you know, us and younger minded people, you know, even David Polk, who's working on his second career as a farmer, who was on the show a while back. You know, it's these kind of folks that are like, you know what, let me get involved. Let me, you know, let me jump into this. And I think it's great.
And so, Ali, I wonder what you think about, in terms of your own future, what this means. I mean, where do you see this going? This is because you've made this huge career change. You were mm-hmm. on a path in the medical field working with Johns Hopkins, and then you said, no, my hands are in the dirt. I want to create something different. Mm-hmm. What does it take you, do you think? What's your vision of where it takes you?
My vision starts with the question, who will feed the future? So mm-hmm. I hear that a lot, you know, in my readings and research, and there's this huge debate on if small-scale farming is actually viable. And I kind of want to be able to show that it is viable, because when we're talking future, we're not just talking about me in 50 years. you know, hundreds of years from now, monocultures and monoculture agriculture and agribusiness are going to completely deplete the land and completely, you know, they're just not supplying the nutrients and stuff that the land needs or the people needs, whereas small-scale farming keeps it at a scale where you can do that, but you just need more small-scale farmers. So at this point, no, small-scale farming can't feed the future because there aren't enough of us. But if, you know, we keep spreading this vision and keep spreading our practices, then I do think it is a viable option for feeding, you know, the billions of people that are hungry in the world right now.
Do you all really see a shift taking place? I mean, even if it's long term, do you see that happening?
I see it. Yeah. Well, at least in my circle. But it is hard when you start talking to people outside your circle of friends and consciousness, and they're completely on a different page.
Because, I mean, you know, Denzel, there are people who are trying to create hubs in some ways to kind of sell things in a larger scale, because part of the problem is, you know, when your farming and the farming you're about to do, Lisa, are called niche farming by a lot of people, is because they sell only to restaurants that charge a lot of money to have dinner.
Mm-hmm. Or they
serve in places that the reality is that regular working folk and middle-class folk just don't go.
Right, exactly. Which is, you know, when we start to talk about, you know, these questions of economy of scale and, you know, and how to reach a much wider market. And I think the aggregators of, you know, of this region and folks who maybe don't want to necessarily farm but are dedicated to sustainable food and decide to start food hubs are another way to do that. And, you know, so me being able to sell, you know, a few cases, and then my friend being able to sell a few cases, and then another friend being able to sell a few cases, then, you know, at a decent price to a food aggregator who can then sell it at a grocery store and give access, you know, to direct consumers, is the way for us to do it. And, it, you know, and that's how we start to feed our community, and then each of these communities feed themselves, and then all of a sudden we see a much larger swath of people being fed. I mean, I think that's the way to do it. Is, you know, we talked about infrastructure before,
right?
And a farmer at my scale not being able to necessarily transport food from, you know, 200 miles away from here, but a food aggregator can. So I can sell it to the food aggregator or to the food hub, and the food hub get it to that group of people at a decent price. You know, so I, as the farmer, get a livable wage, and, you know, hopefully they're making a livable wage so that they can buy it and they can get some of the best food on the planet. You know, it's about all of us working together and using our skills in concert with each other.
And finally, so this is gonna be a big year for you, mm-hmm. making this giant shift. So what will you be growing? I'm just curious. How do you plan to start in the couple minutes we have left?
I'll be growing all types of greens and vegetables. So far I've like bought seeds for arugula, cucumbers, the herbs like basil, cilantro, parsley. I wanted to grow potatoes and tomatoes, but I don't have enough space right there. So if I'm able to adopt another lot, I would be able to do that there. But just not all the types of greens you can think of. And purple is my theme. So I'm going to have purple beans.
Well, that's good.
Purple cabbage, purple lettuce.
they help us keep cancer stay cancer-free.
Yeah, those antioxidants are important.
So I know I didn't get a chance to eat any of Denzel's purple potatoes this year, but I know this coming season. Right, Denzel?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I got you. I'm actually going to pick up my seed potatoes after I get off the phone with you. So
all right.
You're in the mix.
Yeah. I'm going to need some of those, too.
I want to thank both of you. This has been really interesting, and I wish you all the luck. Aaliyah Fraser, we're going to come visit you at the Five Seeds Urban location,
okay,
see what
thank
you're doing.
You. And I'm working for Two Boots Farm with Elisa Lane. So
Oh, cool.
That's who I'll be interning with through BFTP.
Well, we'll see what you're doing during the course of the year and follow you.
Okay.
And Denzel Mitchell, founder of Five Seeds Farm at Apiary. Always good to talk to you, my brother. Thank you so much for joining us.
All right. Absolutely, man.
Before we get this break, and I'll tell you what the next part of the show is, I'll remind you again, please go this Thursday night, March the 6th, to Washington College in Chestertown, Maryland, at Hinson Lounge, 6:30 p.m., Hudson Hall, Washington College, to meet Anne Valesis. She'll be talking about her book, Kitchen Literacy, How We Lost Knowledge of Where Food Comes From and Why We Need to Get It Back. And she'll be joining us next week on this program as well. And this Saturday, you can meet one of the fathers of this movement, Joel Salatin, talking about his new book, Folks, This Ain't Normal, A Farmer's Advice for Happier Hens, Healthier People, and a Better World, at Talbot County Free Library in Eastern Maryland at 3 p.m. on Saturday, and at the Purdue Building Auditorium in Salisbury, Maryland at 7 p.m. You can join Joe Salatin as well next week here on Soundbites. We'll be talking to him when he's here in town. And reminding you to stay with us for our next segment. We're going to close out our show with a new Food and Water Watch public service announcement that takes a funny look at the way what's inside of our chickens. And actor and star of ABC TV show Once Upon a Time, Raphael Sparge, is key in that piece. And as is Food and Water Watch senior lobbyist Tony Corbo. So they join us. Stay with us. And we're going to bring you this really interesting piece you can listen to and hear a conversation. Stay with us.
You know what I'm thinking about?
What are you thinking about? I'm
thinking about chicken.
Chicken?
Chicken.
Hi there. Do you two have any questions about the menu?
Oh, actually, yes.
Yeah, can you tell us about the chicken?
Certainly. They were raised on factory farms where the waste polluted the entire water supply for the whole community.
No way. I love that.
Yeah, they were also fed a steady supply of antibiotics to ensure that they got plump more quickly.
Very lucky.
The CDC says this practice leads to antibiotic-resistant bacteria, which makes people sick. So you're basically contributing to a public health disaster.
Perfect.
So can you also tell us a little bit more about the massive meat company that produced them?
Absolutely. Since just four companies control over 50% of the chicken produced and sold all throughout the U.S., their consolidation and control are what drives the factory farm model that brings you this chicken.
Look, tell me, were they given access to pasture? I'm just kidding. One last thing. Can you tell us how they were processed and inspected?
Once the chickens are slaughtered, they're put in a vat of bleach to clean the poop from their carcasses.
Smart.
And USDA wants to let companies actually inspect their own chicken with processing lines up to 175 birds a minute whizzing by, so there's actually no time to even inspect them at all.
We'll take two.
Would you really eat chicken if you knew the facts?
So you've all just heard the spot, which you can actually go see at steinershow.org and watch it, if you'd like. At this moment as we're speaking, we're about to talk to the actor in the spot, Raphael Sparge, who is a star of the new Food and Water Watch PSA we just talked about, and, of course, star of the ABC TV show Once Upon a Time. And Tony Corbo is the Food and Water Watch senior lobbyist who is addressing this issue in Congress. And Raphael and Tony, good to have you both with us.
Well, thank you for having us on.
Yeah, we're thrilled to be here. Thank you.
So, Raphael, let me start with you, if I might. I know that, you know, actors can do anything they want to do, make any kind of spot they want to make, get paid to sell anything that needs to be sold to continue living and surviving as an actor. But my sense is that's not why you did this one.
Yeah, no, I mean, it rings a lot of bells for me. One, I guess, you know, the spot really speaks about our food supply. I'm a dad. I've got two kids who are 9 and 11. Obviously, children have do many things, but one thing they make you think about a lot is the future and about their well-being. And this really, the safety of the food supply that is such that it is healthy and good for you is sort of an urgent matter. And I guess we're faced now with some pending legislation, and some things have come up and will be coming up before Congress that are urgent. And I was thrilled when they asked me to do something like this. I mean, I have a strong foot in the environmental world. I'm passionate about it, involved in it in many forms. But this is really an opportunity to make people laugh by how ludicrously horrible what these possible proposals are really going to, the road they're going to take us down.
And so one of the things you're fighting in Congress around this, Tony, is a lobbyist for Food and Water Watch. What is this bill you're talking about that this spot was a play on?
Well, what's actually happening is that the United States Department of Agriculture proposed a new regulation in January 2012 that would essentially deregulate the inspection process for poultry. And they would take off the slaughter line USDA inspectors and replace them with company-paid employees to do the lion's share of the inspection. They would leave one USDA inspector at the end of
expanded the slaughter line and actually increased the slaughter line to 175 birds per minute. So in essence, that one USDA inspector at the end of the line is going to be inspecting 3 birds every second. I don't care how good you are, you're not going to be able to see anything at those speeds. And so what the Obama administration did in January 2012 is propose this rule to radically change the inspection process, and they brought this regulation under an executive order to undo burdensome regulations on industry. This was not brought forth as a food safety proposal per se. It was brought under an executive order to undo what they considered to be burdensome regulations on the industry.
And if this bill passes, it would mean that the inspections would then be run by people who work for the company.
Absolutely, and there's a conflict of interest, and so
the chicken guarding the hen house, proverbially.
Right. The chicken guarding the hen house, right?
That's exactly right. What it is.
So, where would this spot be seen? Who's going to see this?
Well, who's going to see what the regulation?
No, I'm talking about what we just heard. What people can see this spot that you all produced.
Oh well, we put it on YouTube, and we've actually sent it out to our members who are in the process of sending comments to both President Obama and to the USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack, asking them to halt the finalization of this rule. This rule has caused a lot of controversy. The fact that this proposed rule is over 2 years old and they still haven't finalized it indicates that they've received a lot of flack from the public already. But it's getting to the point where it's still at USDA. The next step for this rule is to go over to the White House for its final approval before it's published in the Federal Register and this new inspection system is implemented. So that's where we're at. We're at the 11th hour here, and so that's why this particular spot, along with our action, asking our members to write into the president and the Secretary of Agriculture, is so critical.
Can I jump in and just sort of say,
I was going to ask you to go ahead.
Oh yeah, I just to say is I so appreciate the work that they do, and it's so important, and obviously having our voices heard about this is urgent. But I mean, again, as a dad and just as a person who likes chicken, I mean to put it sort of bluntly, I was just sort of shocked to learn that the poultry industry, because of salmonella, which is an urgent matter. I mean, 48 million people a year are affected by salmonella, so it's an urgent matter that safety is considered. But in order to do that, what they use are chemicals. Like, I guess it's choline trisodium phosphate, which is normally used to clean cement. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing this correct, but hyporbic acid, which is used to clean swimming pools, and bleach, Clorox. That's what they use as dips for the chicken. How one thinks that doesn't get passed down to us is a mystery to me. And, of course, this is Obama. He came in with his extraordinary garden and his organic garden, victory garden that he had at the White House, which we also heralded. I know Michelle Obama feels strongly also about food and food safety. And so I know that these must be matters to them that are important as parents as well. And we those of us who love chicken, really urge the president to really reconsider how our food supply is handled, and not only how it's inspected, but what's done to it, what's sprayed on it, what the process it goes through before it gets to us.
Some people say, if you don't let your chicken run free, I ain't eating it. So,
why did the chicken cross the world the road to get away from the chemicals?
Well, I want to thank you, Raphael Sparge, for for actually giving your time to make a commercial for what you believe in. And Tony Corbo, appreciate you as well for the work you're doing as lobbyist. And thank you both so much for joining us here. And we'll share this with the world.
Well, thank you very much, Mark.
The Mark Steiner Show and Soundbites are a production of the Center for Emerging Media, made possible in part by a grant from the Town Creek Foundation. Our producers are Mark Gunnery and Stephanie Mavronis. Our engineer at WEAA is Andre Melton. Our engineer at Public Radio Delmarva is Christopher Rank. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, and find out information from the interviews we are doing on this program, please visit us on the web at steinershow.org. You can also listen to and download our podcasts on iTunes. And for Public Radio, WEAA, 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, and for WSDL 90.7 FM and WSCL 89.5 FM, Delmarva Public Radio, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.